Sixth inning. When Tricia woke up, the birds were singing confidently. The light was strong and bright, the way it looked at mid-morning. She might have slept even longer, but hunger wouldn't allow it. She roared with a vast emptiness from the top of her throat all the way down to her knees, and in the very middle it hurt, actually hurt. It was as if she were being pinched somewhere inside. The feeling frightened her. She had been hungry before, but never hungry enough for it to hurt this way. She backed out of her shelter, knocking it over again, got to her feet, and hobbled to the stream with her hands planted in the small of her back. She probably looked like Pepsi Robichaud's grandmother, the one who was deaf and had arthritis so bad she had to use a walker. Granny Grunt, Pepsi called her. Tricia got down on her knees, planted her hands, and drank like a horse at a trough. If the water made her sick again, and it probably would, so be it. She had to put something in her stomach. She got up, looked dully around her, hitched up her jeans. They had been okay when she put them on long ago and far away in her Sanford bedroom, but they were loose now. Then she started downhill along the course of the stream. She no longer had any real hope that it would take her out, but at least she could put some distance between her and Tricia's puking place. She could do that much. She had gotten perhaps 100 paces when the tough Tootsie spoke up. "Forgot something, didn't you, sugar?" Today the tough Tootsie also sounded like a getting tired Tootsie, but her voice was as cold and ironic as ever, not to mention correct. Tricia stood where she was for a moment with her head down and her hair hanging, then turned around and labored uphill to her little camp of the night before. She had to stop twice on the way and give her pounding heart a chance to slow down. She was appalled by how little strength she had left. She filled her water bottle, stuffed it and the shredded remains of her poncho into her pack, gave a tearful sigh at the pack's weight when she lifted it, the damn thing was all but empty, for goodness sake, and then set off again. She walked slowly, almost plodding now, and although the going was downhill, she still had to stop and rest every 15 minutes or so. Her head throbbed. All the world's colors looked too bright, and when a blue jay called from a branch overhead, the sounds seemed to punch into her ears like needles. She pretended Tom Gordon was with her, keeping her company, and then after a while she didn't have to pretend anymore. He walked along beside her, and although she knew he was an hallucination, he looked as real by daylight as he had by moonlight. Around noon, Tricia stumbled over a rock and sprawled full length in a brambly snarl of bushes. She lay there with the breath knocked out of her and her heart hammering so hard it made white lights in front of her eyes. The first time she attempted to drag herself back to open ground, she couldn't do it. She waited, rested, tried for stillness with her eyes half closed, and then went for it again. This time she pulled herself free, but when she tried to get up, her legs wouldn't support her. No wonder, either, not really. Over the last 48 hours, she'd had nothing to eat but a hard-boiled egg, a tuna sandwich, 2 Twinkies, and a few fiddleheads. She'd also had diarrhea and vomiting. "I'm going to die, Tom, aren't I?" she asked. Her voice was calm, lucid. There was no answer. Tricia raised her head and looked around. Number 36 was gone. Tricia dragged herself over to the stream and had a drink. The water didn't seem to be bothering her stomach and bowels anymore. She didn't know if that meant she was getting used to it, or just that her body had given up trying to rid itself of the bad stuff, the impurities. Tricia sat up, wiped her dripping mouth, and looked northwest along the course of the stream. The terrain up ahead was moderating, and the old forest seemed to be changing once again, the firs giving way to smaller, younger trees. Your basic forest clenches and tangles, in other words, with plenty of underbrush clogging up any easy way through. She didn't know how long she could continue in that direction, and if she tried to walk in the stream, she guessed that the current would bowl her over. There were no helicopters, no barking dogs. She had an idea she could hear those sounds if she wanted to, just as she could see Tom Gordon if she wanted to, so it was best not to think in that direction. If any sounds surprised her, they might be real. Tricia didn't think any sounds would surprise her. "I'm going to die in the woods." Not a question this time. Her face twisted into an expression of sorrow, but there were no tears. She held out her hands and looked at them. They were trembling. At last she got to her feet and began to walk again. As she made her way slowly downhill, clutching at tree trunks and branches to keep from falling over, two detectives from the Attorney General's office were questioning her mother and brother. Later that afternoon, a psychiatrist who worked with the state police would try to hypnotize them, and with Pete, he would succeed. The focus of their questions had to do with pulling into the parking lot on Saturday morning and getting ready to hike. Had they seen a blue van? Had they seen a man with blonde hair and eyeglasses? Dear Christ, Quilla said, finally giving in to the tears she had until now largely held off. Dear Christ, you think my baby was kidnapped, don't you? Snatched from behind us while we were arguing. At that, Pete also began to cry.